Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
The celebration is on. It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast, the Week 3 edition, following an exciting weekend at Villanova Stadium alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm Kevin Brown, coming at you for Inside Lacrosse's coverage here. And Rosie, this is your not first, not second, but third podcast of the week coming away from the action in Philly. Rosie, it's always great to catch up with you here. And, you know, I'm a little bit all over the place right now, moving my lady out of her current place. And we just moved the last piece of furniture. I'm currently on a step stool in a empty living room. But when you got to talk ball, you got to talk ball. Rosie, thanks so much for joining. And what'd you think of the action from Philly?
You know, I think it was one of those weekends where everything you thought was going to happen, something a little bit different ended up happening, right? A lot of assumptions got shaken up. A lot of bets and predictions were proven wrong. And that's just what we love about this league. It keeps you on your toes any given week.
This league, absolutely, Matt. Like, no more winless teams, no more undefeated squads. The Boston Cannons fall to the Philadelphia Water Dogs, of course. The Archers got everything and more from the California Redwoods after an early fast start. And then Saturday happened with the Whip Snakes absolutely just coming back. Great come from behind victory against the New York Atlas. And then the pattern of homecoming weekends continue with the Denver Outlaws getting their first win of the season against the Water Dogs. Rosie, let's start with some recaps, and we'll kind of spin zone most of our takes ahead to homecoming weekend for the Whip Snakes here at Homewood Field. But let's start with Friday night, because that was some really high level, great action. And you know, the Boston Cannons and Philadelphia Water Dogs had two of the most elite offenses in the league. Thank you to recurring guest Asher Nolting for providing the ammo of the week for the Dogs coming away from our podcast appearance. And man, they came out firing. Like, no one can stop this Michael Sowers fella.
Yeah, it looks like they've really kind of, you know, figured out the formula. You know, I don't think, you know, they had a terrible record last year, right? But I don't think people were saying, you know, this is an awful team, blow up the team. You know, they had just gone to back-to-back championship appearances. A lot of these one-goal losses and things like that. But you see them this season, and it feels funny to say, because obviously the last, our last impression of the Water Dogs is not this game. And so, you know, being aware that we did see them later this past weekend, putting up 7 goals. But just
totally
put that to the side for a second, and just the impression of this game, it really looked like they had all elements of the game figured out. You know, offense, defense, everything in between, goalie situation that, you know, some people would envy, you know, having to pick between DeLuca and Ward, or as we see DeLuca later on. You know, that's another kind of a good problem to have, sort of an embarrassment of riches. The Water Dogs, after this game, taking on a Boston Cannons team that had just knocked off the Archers, really seemed, you know, you kind of start thinking, man, how is somebody going to stop these guys?
And, you know, just your summary just really encapsulated how fun it is to do the power rankings this week, which is why I'm going to hand it off to you. You can take care of the DLL power rankings for a week. Now, I'll grade through it, Rosie, and I'm sure I won't get as much hate as Quint got, maybe with some of his takes. Are the Redwoods for real? Jury's still out. Which brings me to, you know, You started this wrap-up column, and I want to read you back some of the quotes that you singled out, and I want you to explain for our audience, why you were enamored with a couple of these quotes, starting with that Anthony Kelly quote. Before we go back to the Cannons Dogs game, it's just... Everybody wants to just continue to say we're not real, we're not the thing, and I love that, man. Keep writing that stuff for us, please. Like, I love it. You know, we know who exactly who we are, the guys in this locker room, that's all that matters, and I feel very good about where we are and the direction we're going. So please put us in number 7 this week, please. It's like, is Anthony Kelly the new Andy Towers of this league?
Yeah, they're steering into the skid and leaning into the disrespect side of things. I don't know what number would have generated a more positive reaction. You know what I mean? Like if you asked him, well, you do the ranking, what number do you think the Redwoods are right now? You know, I'm guessing maybe he says top 3. He's probably happy with.
He's got to say 1.
He could.
Like, you know, I mean, he's allowed to if you're the head coach, you know. Maybe if you're GM Joe Spallina, you take the longer view. Maybe you're wheeling, dealing. We're not number 1 yet. Like, give me some of your players. If you're Anthony Kelly, you need your players confident. You need these young guys playing out of their minds. And for the record, I had them at number 5. Okay, so I think that's pretty appropriate. 2-1 record so far. But
that's a great book.
All that to say, it was just an incredible Friday night, and you know we'll get back to Kelly and the Redwoods really quick here. But we left some to be desired with this Water Dogs Cannons game. Rosie, sum up a little bit of the game flow and what you thought of just, you know, the differences between game 1 and game 4 between the host here.
Well, you know, especially if you talk to them, they were not really interested, they being the Water Dogs, weren't really interested in handing out any sort of excuses for the kind of lapse in offensive production between these games. But they did acknowledge that going into the second game, they were pretty tired, you know? And they, again, made a point to say, look, we're not making excuses for ourselves. But they did recognize going into this game, having to cover these Outlaws players in their second game, you really kind of have to dig deep. You know, and especially as the summer gets a little bit longer, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like this weekend in Baltimore, but last time in Baltimore was about 100 degrees on the field. So it's a nightmare. So, you know, having to do that, you know, back-to-back days, it's something that every team, it's a challenge they're all going to have to experience. Nobody's been successful with it so far this year, but we have seen teams pull off, you know, the home sweep last year. So it is something that is doable. It's not, you know, a death sentence right away to have 2 games like that. But yeah, part of it, I think, comes down to that. And it does make a lot of sense. The first game was just another clinic by Michael Sowers. You know, you're trying to figure out a strategy. Do you double team him? Maybe in past years that might have worked out a little bit better. But the way he was kind of buzzing in games 1 and games 2 of the Water Dogs season, it really just, if they draw the double team, he knows where to move the ball. If you want to let him go 1-on-1, he's going to get his hands free for a shot or something like that. And yeah, we clearly saw that, I think, a lot in that game against the Cannons. Real heavy pick play by the Water Dogs. It kind of seems to be their bread and butter. They want to get you confused. They want to make you decide what to do on the picks. It kind of reminded me of like a knuckleball pitcher. It's like, you know what it's going to be, but then you have to pick the right decision, you know? And you would see certain picks that, say, a defender would try to go underneath. And when that happens, you know, Kieran McArdle one time, he just had his hands free. So his defender goes underneath the pick, and he was like, okay, well, I'm just going to shoot it from here. And then if you try to go atop of the pick, you might find a situation like they had similar side of the field, I think. Zach Currier faces it off and just throws a behind-the-back pass over to his man, who's wide open now because he's throwing a double team. They want to just constantly make defenses make the wrong decisions, which we saw a lot in that Boston game.
Yeah.
A lot in it was kind of a prevailing theme throughout the week. But yeah, I think that's really something that teams are going to have to focus on moving forward.
Especially in early offense, right? Like the decisions they put offensive midfielders on the opposition in constantly. Matt Wicher, Dylan Hess has kind of thrived in this role as an absolute unit. This is a scary team, and they have the midfielders to finish off these chances, let alone having Kieran McArdle and Jake Taylor inside to just finish everything. Thomas McConvey, Jack Hanna have been very efficient with their shooting opportunities. And when you get Taylor shooting between the legs and then Zach Currier going backhanded before the slide can get there, like, you're in trouble early. Now, the Cannons did fight back, made a better game of it than I think the scoreline showed, but definitely a good status update of, all right, this is how it's going to be this year. You know, no team is going to run away with kind of an undefeated record through however many weeks. Like, we're going to be as tight as the standings could be. I think in past podcasts, in, you know, our season predictions, I was very mistakenly talking about how the California Redwoods and Carolina Chaos could both miss the playoffs. Rosie, newsflash, different structure this year, and only one of them can miss it from the Western Conference. Carolina, of course, a Western team. We all know this.
Sure, of course.
And it really crystallized this weekend of when the Whipsnakes came back, like, oh, man. We're not going to see one of these Eastern Conference teams in the playoffs. So it's really made the playoff race a thrilling one. And we'll hit on that in a future podcast for sure. But Rosie, let's go right to Mr. Anthony Kelly and his California squad. Falling just short of a Tom Shriver-led Utah Archers group. Man, my favorite play from this one was... And I could set you up in a number of different ways, but a play that was challenged, reviewed, and stood where Tom Shriver hustles toward the sideline, knocks it loose, lets it run, gets checked, and Chris Conlon tries to save it. He's restart ready, gets it over to the rookie, and man, Sam King with the range, that all 5 foot seven of them from 2 point land. And that really proved to be a difference making play in a one goal win for the back to back champs. Rosie, what were some of your biggest takeaways from Woods versus Archers?
Well, first of all, yeah, that play was just incredible. Tom Shriver after the game said basically he was just going to look to kill the clock at that point because the shot clock was pretty much over, right? It was like 4 seconds left when he picked up the ball, but he happened to see King in the right spot. So, you know, you kind of...
That is great because I think that really speaks to... I didn't realize he said that. Like,
yeah.
When you watch the replay, I think that really like shows you how quick, how much faster his mind is moving than maybe us plebeians, because if I was thinking about that, I would be like... like, where should I toss it in the corner? Like, no, he's like, he makes all those freaking changes, of course, to in like 0.2 seconds.
Yeah. And the Archers are 2-1, but 2-1 goal wins. If King's not in that lineup, I'm not sure if they have any of those wins. He has been very pivotal to this team this season. Slow start for the Redwoods, or conversely, quick start for the Archers, however you want to put it. I guess it does kind of fall more kind of attributed to the Redwoods side because they had previously experienced the same thing against Carolina the week before. So they're kind of taking a little bit to get going. Now, with that being said, losing by one after having a slow start is something that I think they all kind of rallied around, where they say, you know, hey, we didn't give up. We fell behind, but we fought back, you know, against the defending champion, kind of like a Rocky situation. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, we didn't win, but, you know, we really showed them what we were made of, right? We gave them our best effort. They were a man down for a good chunk of this game, losing Chris Merle to what was later diagnosed as a torn ACL. But they do have kind of some rallying points. I guess the big question is going to be, you know, if there is such a thing as moral victories that kind of, you know, galvanize the team, could this sort of almost victory against the Archers be something that kind of adds some fuel to the fire moving forward?
Rosie, to kind of put a cap on that point, first off, do you remember the Syracuse Cornell epic 17-16 2024 regular season game? Because if you do, you might know where I'm taking this. Sam English gets the ball, he's clearing it, and just goes totally solo, weaving through traffic in the middle of the field. And man, that boy can rough. he was going fast. And had about 2-3 seconds left with, you know, Ryder Garnsey's on the doorstep, yes. But it's not like the shot was ill-advised. Like, if he cans it, that's a buzzer beater sending the OT with all the momentum, and maybe the Redwoods pull off a crazy comeback upset. Instead, we're talking about moral victories here on this show, but you have any cries? Did you want him to pass it to Garnsey?
Well, here's the thing. Garnsey, with about 4 seconds left, he, like, his man slides off of him, but then Garnsey's first move is to take a step backwards.
Right. He's like, backing it. Like, why are you backing it up?
He goes back to, like, GLE, and then later he runs backwards and then runs forward. If he goes forward the whole time, I'm not saying Sam English would have necessarily seen him, because, you know, maybe he just had blinders on and was like, I got to get down this field and, you know, get this shot off. But, you know, one step in the correct direction first, and Garza would have at least been kind of waving his stick, screaming for the ball or something like that, for an easy dunk attempt. Kudos Sam English for making the sprint, covering the distance. I think Brett Dobson was just dialed in at that point. Another thing where these Archers are pulling off these victories, you know, Dobson was just locked in. And all of their shots, well, I should say most of their shots late, were trying to beat him low. Maybe that's the scout right now while he kind of tries to recover from the high ankle sprain. But, you know, he just kept closing the door over and over and over again. I'm going to get this stat wrong, I think, even though I wrote it. I think it was like 5 saves in the last 4 minutes of that game for him. You know, one goal game. He's just somebody who constantly doesn't really get too shaken, regardless of what's going on. So, you know, I liked the play. I liked the, you know, being able to get anything from that is certainly good. It's quality shot, quality look. I think Dobson just ate it up and was like, you know, welcome to the big leagues. You know, that shot's not going to go on me in this situation. This ain't your little rinky-dink ACC. I'm Brett Dobson. And he just ate it up, and the game was over. Sends the champs home with another win.
Rinky-dink ACC. Love it, man. Like, I was worried Sam Hanley traded for a good debut for his new squad here. Some good goals, a couple questionable takes. That's what you live with. You want to instill confidence. And I was nervous for our boy, Josh Buffcarcel. And he still produces. Red Fox Nation still shows out. Still, it's an incredible lineup they put together for this midfield unit that has struggled the past few seasons for this ball club. So, Rosie, I want to move on to Saturday's games here at Villanova Stadium, which brings me to your next quote of the week, which I laughed audibly at in the post-game press conference up in Philadelphia. Whipsnakes coach Jim Stagnita opens his opening remarks with, "I thought they might switch to cornhole. It's on ABC at 8-1, and good thing they didn't, nor how could they with the stylish three of the first six Atlas goals being behind the back. They were crushing it." And Joe Nardella digs in. The defense makes a small adjustment. And TJ Malone has his blueprints all over this one to come back for a 16-12 win, which is a real statement, both of, hey, we have the best defenseman in the world. We don't care what the BLL Happy Hour podcast thinks in their love for former guest Gavin Adler. Matt Dunn, would love to have you on the show, by the way. Also, Rosie, I wrote in the outline, I'm interested in your reaction to it. I think this result said more about the Atlas short stick defensive midfield depth than it did with any sort of underwhelming performance from the reigning MVP Jeff Teat, who was held to one missed shot and one assist against Meta.
I could not agree more. This game could be put on like your for your consideration highlight reel for Danny Logan being named MVP of the league. Because just think about it like this, right? You remember when Copeland was coaching the Water Dogs and we heard him with this strategy where he's basically like, listen, we're not setting picks so you get Danny Logan to cover you because that's not going to work out for you. Like, that's not a good thing to do. You don't want him covering you. So he was saying specifically pick away from Danny Logan. And that kind of strategy was, you know, embraced and repeated throughout the league. People don't want any part of that guy. So the Atlas go from a situation where they have a short stick that people specifically don't want to challenge to him being out of the lineup. And now they have this situation where they have, you know, it's like welcome back to Earth with the rest of us. These short sticks are just going to get picked on nonstop. And that's, you know, I mean, that's how pro lacrosse goes. You just get tested constantly if you're a short stick defensive midfielder until you kind of, you know, build that reputation for yourself that you're not one to be messed with, like that Danny Logan has had. But otherwise, you know, you have this situation where the Whipsnakes were just, it was another real pick-heavy game, and they just kept moving the ball around and setting up the picks and working on backdoor cuts or whatever they had to do to make sure they could try to get that matchup. And they would just constantly try to test the Atlas second and third line short stick defensive midfielders.
So much like the Redwoods, the Atlas was left shorthanded at that position. Surely a storyline with game day lineups coming out in the next couple of days when you're listening to this podcast. Max Krebsky and you would have thought Jake Stevens would have joined in taking most of the runs, but it's mostly the rookie Krebsky in his, I believe, debut versus and as well as Peyton Rezonka. And to your point, like the midfield production was just unreal for the Whips. Adam Poitras was doing everything. He ended up with 4 goals and 6 shots. Aiden Carroll, Colin Heacock, both had hat tricks. And Brad Smith, nice little, his best game yet this season with a goal and a two. And that two-pointer was crucial. And, allowing them the start to come back down 12-8, looked like New York had responded to their mini run. And all of a sudden, it's a one-possession game again, 12-10. And, man, they got these midfielders who can just get downhill on you and just blast it on the run, which, you know, you lose Chanin Truk. Yeah, you lose unfortunate news to Tucker Dordovic coming out last week. But having Carroll, we saw what Poitras can do all season last year. This is a dangerous crew, and how size up for me, Rosie, just how crucial a first win is when you're coming up against, as we mentioned, a very hot doubleheader at Homewood.
So, you know, look, obviously there's still, 70% of the regular season to go. But I don't feel like it's totally exaggerating to say that was probably kind of make or break for them. You know, heading into the doubleheader, 0-3, having just dropped another game against a conference opponent in the Atlas, that's a serious, serious hill to climb at that point. You know, maybe they pulled off 2 at home this time, like they did last year, but let's just assume they went 1-1. Even still, at that point, you know, 1-3, still for a team that would be, you know, still kind of looking for answers, looking to figure things out, going against, you know, the way that the other guys in the East, like Philadelphia and Boston, even with the loss also to Philadelphia, but even with that loss, everybody would be looking pretty strong. And you would have to imagine there would be kind of the real recipe for some Maryland disarray if they didn't pull this win off this weekend. But obviously now, not just a win, but a huge comeback win where everybody kind of stands on business and they say, you know, look what we can do here, right? Like, it wasn't like a sort of a fluky thing. They, like I said, they locked it down and turned things around. You have to imagine that sort of vibe heading into their home atmosphere. You know, now they're probably feeling like they're on top of the world. So, you know, we're talking about a complete 180-degree turn after pulling off this victory. So, you know, without putting too much exaggeration on it, this win was probably entirely necessary and just super huge for the locker room and everything around the Maryland Whiffsnakes.
A couple quick things I want to hit on before heading into the final game that I think kind of turned into a dud after a little brouhaha at the end of the first half. You know, Stags is very straightforward post game in terms of how he sees this offense, and it's got to go through TJ Malone. He's got to be, if he's producing at this level and the Whipsnakes keep winning in the MVP conversation with how valuable he is to this offense. 3 goals, 2 assists. They want the ball to go through him as much as possible. They said it all last year too as a rookie, so he's continuing on that path. While the midfield production was the kind of key for them offensively, alongside kind of Malone just going to work, including a couple key late goals in that last 8-0 run. Like, the big story coming into the game was the reshuffled attack unit. Matt Rambo coming out of the box. And, you know, I appreciate... I mentioned you being on your third podcast this week, you audio legend so far in week 3, but you joined the Stick Talk crew, and man, I was listening the week prior, and no one is as brutally honest as this poor Shane fellow, giving it Rambo the business. I'm excited to listen to the episode that you were on as well, but I even watching it live, like, Whipsnakes fans are not pleased with the ball staying in Rambo's stick for too long, and then a you know, kind of a wraparound tackle turnover from Rozanka late. But I liked his 2 assists, man. Like, I like him being able to come out of the box and back someone down. And it'll be interesting to see how this attack unit unfolds for two games, especially with Rob Pinnell getting some heavy wrap around his calf in that first quarter. And I'm told that he should be good to go for the homecoming. But, you know, you got to make use of those protected and reserve roster kind of allocations for game two.
Yeah, it's been a tough go for Matt Rambo so far. You know, first of all, yeah, shout out to the guys over at Stick Talk. They're crushing the podcast game. Big fan of theirs. But yeah, no, Rambo, it's been tough. Seeing kind of the past couple of years for him, you know, I mean, being just having such a legendary sort of PLL debut, he was, you know, the guy when the PLL gets started, right? You know, wins the championship in Pennsylvania, wins pretty much every award you can possibly win. And then over the past few years, you know, he's reached a point now where, and he'll be the first to admit it, he literally was the first to admit it, he said it after the championship game that they lost, he needs to find different ways to kind of let his role evolve. He's not going to be, you know, 2019 Matt Rambo due to, first of all, what the team needs. You know, they've got a TJ Malone now. And secondly, obviously, because that was 6 years ago, and that's a long time. So I think what he has to really worry about is just kind of efficiency, because, you know, I think the leash gets a lot shorter in his case right now, you know, and he's aware that, just first of all, for the sake of helping his team, and second, for, you know, being one of Jim Stagnita's players, he understands he can't go out there and, you know, get 35 touches and, you know, have 6 turnovers a game or something like that, because he will get yanked like he did, and, you know, he'll get moved to a different position, and then he'll have to make it work or he'll have to sit. So, yeah, I did like what he did in some situations this past weekend, but, you know, I think part of what happened was, and, you know, this is kind of a thing he'll probably have to, you know, work to kind of regulate. And I think a lot of players probably get into this situation. You say, okay, I need to make something happen, right? And, you know, Matt Rambo a couple years ago, when he says, I need to make something happen, he's going to go to the goal and drag 3 guys, you know, with their arms around his neck, and he's still going to make a play. But now it's not quite the same. You know, that's something we all experience at some degree, right? You say, okay, you know, I would have dunked here last year, but now I got to try for a layup or something like that. And, you know, it's part just kind of figuring out how your game's going to evolve. And, you know, if he continues to have the opportunity to let his game evolve. Before we move on, I did want to mention regarding midfield, 2 things about the Atlas. No midfield production from those guys in this one. You know, we were kind of talking about their defensive midfield getting picked on. Their offensive midfield didn't have much success. You're looking at the box score, 0 points for Brian Costabile, 0 for Miles Jones. You know, Matt Traynor had just disgustingly filthy behind the back goal, but he was carrying the weight there. So, you know, obviously they had some help from Schellenberger, but they're going to need some more widespread production there. And defensive midfield, we mentioned Danny Logan. After the game, Mike Pressler said, you know, his fingers were crossed that he was going to get Logan back for this weekend. But Atlas today did announce that they signed Chris Davis, another short stick defensive midfielder. I can't say that inherently means Logan's not coming back. You know, maybe somebody else is getting bumped out of the lineup. But it's certainly worth keeping an eye on that maybe this means they're going to be without Logan's services a bit longer than Mike Pressler thought this time last week.
Yeah, and to your point, so I wrote a little bit about the adjustment that was alluded to post-game by both Stags and Matt Dunn with. And excuse me if I'm off base here, but it looked like on the rewatch that Teat was bringing Dunn into a position where, you know, he is so focused on pressing out and denying Teat the ball that if you dodge straight at him, then he's kind of put in this awkward position where he can't, like, he doesn't want to help and slide to you. The Matt Trainer BTB comes from that, and Hugh Kelleher gets his first goal as a rook, debutant. And then, you know, Dunn starts helping, and they don't go back to it at all. Like, it was kind of confusing the second quarter and all, and you didn't really see that. But to your point, like, I do think the Whipsnakes are maybe right there with Utah as one of the best defensive rope units in the game. Getting Christian Mazur this draft was just, like, a major weakness plugged in immediately. With him, Roman Pugliis, and Colin Squires getting some post-game love from Stags, too. So that's a scary group to dodge against, for sure. And you saw Squires getting some disruptive checks whenever a shot would try to go. Of course, I think Miles Jones had a few assist opportunities that were unlucky and didn't fall. But overall, like, you size that up with, like, a Pedersen, Connor Marr, and Mason Woodward's now up there with who's their other guy, Piper Bond for the Archers. And those are probably the two best defensive groups. But to transition into this Saturday night game seamlessly, this is probably the best transition rope unit. And boy, do they rely on it with Jake Paisino and Ryan Tarasenko just... run around the field like crazy men, and it led to Coach Tim Sudan giving probably the best Tarasenko impersonation we have ever seen in a post-game press conference. They did account for most of their offense, and if it wasn't for them, then this is probably an 0-3 Denver group. They get their first win, 1-2. Jared Bernhardt gets his first pro goal. Logan Wisnowskis, of course, getting the game ball. Love that. College roomies in the pros. And Pat Cavanaugh, you know, teams are going to make him be a scorer, and they need to because his passing is so elite. And props to him for continuing to fire away, because I think he took 9 or 10 shots and canned 3 of them. I didn't like his first twister effort. He goes back to it in transition. Kind of you're losing angle there, but hey, it's deceptive and it works, and it did that time as well. All 4 Tortons score as well. And just a great first win where you're still seeing the pieces come together gradually for this Denver offense.
Yeah, I think you nailed it as far as kind of one of the biggest keys for Denver in this game. The transition game was just so solid. They were just moving the ball up the field in like half a second.
If you're playing your second game, you don't want to be playing ever.
Right, exactly. That's another thing that they just jumped all over. You know, there was a McNaney with a clean save, and then, you know, if he gets it up to Pizzano and you know, finish the dunk with Kavanaugh there on the end, Tarasenko was a major contributor. That was kind of like, when you look at those names, when you just look at the names, you're like, okay, I bet they would be a pretty solid transition team. You know, and this game was them basically kind of living up to the expectations of when you look at that roster. That's what you should get a few times. They should be a very heavy counterpunching team. And, you know, Ryan Tarasenko just having the green light to just kind of fly up the field and do whatever. You know, they have Zach Geddes there as well, who, you know, sure will have his opportunities in addition to that. And, you know, if you get Pat Cavanaugh in a position like he had in this game where he can kind of can those transition plays, it's definitely going to be tough to stop them. You know, just incredibly low scoring game on both sides. So we'll have to see if they can get more of a settled offense as well, because I think you're going to need more of the settled offense as well. as the transition game against some of the other teams or against the team that may not be quite as tired as the Water Dogs. You know, say you're facing, you know, we'll say the Cannons with, you know, a week's rest or something like that. You might have to beat them more in a settled 6-on-6 than they saw in this one. But their strength, I think, was the transition game, and they delivered.
So much star power on the field, and becomes a defensive battle. Kudos to Outlaws' debut goalie, Logan McNaney. They take him with their first pick in the draft, which was in the second round, of course. And he showed why he's was taken so high, you know, like 14 saves, higher save percentage of any goalie this weekend. I'm excited to see them again against another great defensive team, because, you know, the Water Dogs did hold them to under 10 goals here in week 4. Rosie, this is my favorite game of Homewood Field weekend here in the Whip Snakes homecoming. It's the Denver Outlaws versus Utah Archers on day 2 of the weekend. You'll be there live for both days. I'll be there for day 2 again. So a little partisan in why this is my favorite, because I'll be there live, of course. But sure, man, I am very excited to see, you know, how these lumbering Archers defensemen match up with, you know, you got O'Neill, Wisnowskis, and also kudos to the Cavanaughs, by the way. Not that they need it, and because they hear it all the time how tough they are, but man, did Chris take a whack to the head, and Pat really freaking got decked by Ben Weyer, who maybe you wouldn't expect to throw the lumber around, but he's been physical these first few weeks as a rookie. So kudos to them for, you know, getting up, and it was definitely caused some fun melee scenarios that ended up being more NBA shoving and pushing than anything else.
Right.
Rosie, what is your favorite game heading into week 4?
My favorite game is the first game. I'm looking forward to the New York Atlas versus the Philadelphia Water Dogs. Water Dogs get a couple days here to rest and recover, and the Atlas get this time to recover emotionally from dropping that last one. Basically, it starts with this. I want to see who's going to cover Michael Sowers. Is it going to be a Adler versus Sowers matchup? I would pay a lot of money to just see Adler versus Sowers. I mean, just their techniques, it really seems to be something where I can't call it. You know what I mean? Like, I need to see what's going to happen here, because I feel like Adler's well-positioned and well-experienced with Sowers' game. But of course, as everybody's had to kind of figure out, what are you going to do with everybody else around Michael Sowers? And then on the other side of the ball, Kenny Brower this past weekend, talked about him a couple times, and we'll talk about him until Friday, and then maybe past that. Just two outstanding performances against Marcus Holman and Brendan O'Neill. You know, pretty lofty competition. Brendan O'Neill one stands out in particular.
Two different guys, too. Yeah, like different player makes.
Yeah. Very different styles you have to adjust to there. And O'Neill being the hard-dodging lefty versus Brower, who is also left-handed. Bill Tierney mentioned in the postgame of that one that he's not crazy about that kind of matchup. He doesn't love a lefty matching up against a lefty, or a righty matching up against a righty, you know, just because the, you know, the obvious ground that you kind of concede inherently if your stick is on the wrong side of your body versus where their stick is. That being said, in that particular matchup, Kenny Brower said he wanted to do it. You know, he wanted to cover Brendan O'Neill. Obviously, I would assume a lot of that had to do with the experience factor of playing with him every day, but also is probably stepping up to the challenge as well. I think he would just want to perhaps kind of, you know, you hear that a lot where players are like, no, I wanted to go against that guy, you know? So what I want to see this upcoming weekend is where we see Kenny Brouwer this time. Do we see another lefty versus lefty? Does Brouwer call out Jeff Teat? Like, is that the encore here? Does he go for another elite attackman, try to shut him down? And, you know, I don't know if he has the same kind of experience with this particular lefty. So it's going to be a little bit different of a shakeup than Brendan O'Neill in that situation. And what do we see from Jeff Teat after last week's very silent performance, you know, at the hands of Matt Dunn? Is he looking for a bounce back game there as well? So really just want to see the matchups here and exactly how it's going to play out.
Rosie, quick fire predictions for our two games of the week here. And to wrap up, I'll give you mine, but you got to start.
Okay. Oh, let's see here. So, you know, so on one hand, I will say this. I think Trevor Baptiste is going to have himself a nice afternoon, but I do think the Atlas, and to their own acknowledgement, have not been able to capitalize on the wins necessarily that he has been getting. So let's knock that down a little bit. You know what? The midfield could be a question mark for the likes of Jack Hanna coming down the alley. I could see someone like him having a big game, even if they put up the pole like the Outlaws were doing. So I'm going to say my prediction is the Water Dogs bounce back in this one and score some of the goals that they were saving from their last performance.
Big trouble, big problems for New York. Falling to 1-3 then. I'm going to hit you with a Denver Outlaws getting up early. I think they put up 12 in the first three quarters. I think they like Jared Bernhardt coming out of the box so much. Creates so much. I think Bundy gets going. And then the Archers come back. I think they win 14-12. Hold them silent in the fourth quarter. Fields is due for a good game after, you know, balling out in that first game. And let's see more Sam King and see him a little more inverts, maybe a little more down the alley, cross field skips, perhaps. And I think they take this one in a comeback victory style. Stay tuned for all IL's coverage of it, though. We'll see how wildly off we are with these two predictions. Much of the show we didn't get to today, we'll get to next week. And you know, maybe we'll bring back some guests. All right? We had two last week, so it makes up for zero today. But more on adulterated takes for you listeners. We appreciate you sticking through it all with us here with the PL Happy Hour podcast. If you like what you heard, leave a review, share with a friend, and we'll catch you back here next week.